My name is Charles Dyke of Nixon Peabody, and I submitted an amicus brief in McDonald v. City of Chicago in support of Chicago's handgun ban on behalf of the Board of Education of the City of Chicago, the Legal Community Against Violence, and a number of other organizations who are identified at the end of this podcast and who are actively engaged in efforts to reduce handgun violence. At issue in the McDonald case is whether the Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms is incorporated as against the states by the 14th Amendment, either the 14th Amendment's Due Process Clause or its Privileges or Immunities Clause. We make three broad arguments in our brief. The first is that the Second Amendment's structure precludes its incorporation. Second, we argue that the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment does not support incorporation. And third, even if the court decides to incorporate the right to keep and bear arms, the right remains subordinate to the greater right of all individuals to personal security. We begin in our brief with the premise that the right to arms, even for personal self-defense, is fundamentally different from all other liberties in society, for the obvious reason that guns are designed to kill people. Our first argument is that the structure of the Second Amendment prevents incorporation against the states of the right to keep and bear arms as articulated in District of Columbia versus Heller. The Heller case is the Supreme Court's 2008 decision holding for the first time that the Second Amendment confers an individual right against the federal government to keep firearms in the home for self-defense. Heller holds that the reason the Second Amendment was added to the Constitution was to prevent the federal government from destroying the militia. Why did that matter? Because the militia, which was a body concurrently governed by the states, stood as a check against possible federal tyranny. The amendment protected the militia by conferring an individual right to keep and bear arms, although only arms that have some reasonable relationship to the preservation or efficiency of a well-regulated militia, that per the Supreme Court's 1939 Miller case, which was cited with approval in Heller, and only arms that are in common use for lawful purposes, like self-defense. That also from the Supreme Court's Miller case. Since the entire point of amending the Constitution to add the Second Amendment was to prevent the federal government from undermining the state's ability to keep a possible federal tyranny in check, it would be odd in the extreme to use the 14th Amendment to turn this kind of federalism provision back around against the states. To the extent the individual right to keep and bear arms, as articulated in Heller, protects the keeping and bearing of weapons for other lawful purposes, such as self-defense, the existence and scope of that right historically has been defined and regulated by the states under their traditional police power. Again, it would be odd in the extreme for the court to begin applying a right whose contours are defined by reference to state law against the states themselves. Our second argument is that the Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms, as articulated in Heller, does not meet the Due Process Clause test for incorporation under the 14th Amendment. Under the court's cases going back to the 1930s, to be incorporated and therefore applied against the states, a right enumerated in the Bill of Rights must be so essential that it's implicit in the concept of ordered liberty. And in determining whether a right is implicit in the concept of ordered liberty, the court asks whether neither liberty nor justice would exist if the right were sacrificed. The only way a right to arms can be fundamental in the Due Process Clause sense is if it is shown that denial of a particular weapon is the same thing as denial of liberty or justice. And since the liberty interest at stake in this case is the right to have arms for self-defense, the petitioners have to show that the handgun ban prevents them from defending themselves, that they are left with no reasonable alternative. And that's a showing that the petitioners do not try to make. The petitioners do argue that if the court incorporates the Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms, then the case is open and shut, that the Heller decision mandates that Chicago's handgun ban, like the one in Washington, D.C., must fail. We disagree. Our third argument is that even if the court incorporates the right to keep and bear arms against the states, when it's applied against the states, the right has to be subject to normal police power regulation, and it has to remain subordinate to the greater right of personal security that all individuals have in society. That's how the right to arms for self-defense has been understood in the states since the time the country was founded. States have always been free under the police power to reasonably regulate the right to arms. We, in our brief, cite 19th and 20th century cases and treatises to support the point that pistols and knives and other weapons deemed to be too dangerous have always been subject to bans, which were upheld against constitutional challenge. Cities and urban areas have always been understood to have different needs than rural areas, and a well-established principle of the police power is that stricter regulations are needed in cities to keep order and to keep peace than are needed in the countryside. Regulating arms under the police power to prevent crime and protect the safety of the broader community is in fact pervasive and has been subject only to reasonableness review in virtually every state to consider the question. As long as a regulation does not prohibit the use of all firearms, it does not unduly burden the right to have arms for self-defense. That, in a nutshell, is the argument we make in our brief. All of the amici who signed on to this brief are the following: the Board of Education of the City of Chicago, the Institute of Medicine of Chicago, the Wayman African Methodist Episcopal Church of Chicago, the Illinois Council Against Handgun Violence, the Legal Community Against Violence, the Violence Policy Center, States United to Prevent Gun Violence, Freedom States Alliance, Connecticut Against Gun Violence, Maine Citizens Against Gun Violence, Citizens for a Safer Minnesota, Ohio Coalition Against Gun Violence, Wisconsin Anti-Violence Effort Educational Fund, and GunFreeKids.org.